102.3 FM.
All right, you're listening to Radio Korama. We have a great day coming up. We're coming into Shabbat. Stay tuned. We have Ganan Chaverim coming in with Cantor Carol Chester for our Shabbat programming. It's a nice day. Looks like a day with some white clouds, a little blue sky. Nice and cool, must be in the mid-70s, no humidity, and that's good news because tomorrow night we've got astronomy night, and a big shout out to the Westchester Amateur Astronomy Association that's coming in tomorrow to really give us a treat, a tour of the night sky. And we are thrilled here at Radio Korama to have a fellow who I have been looking forward to getting down here in our Ulpan. Ulpan, I'm trying to get one of those shirts. I'm thrilled to have down here in the Ulpan with us Alex Sinclair. Alex, welcome to Radio Korama.
Hi, Mitch. It's great to be here. I'm happy to be here for the first time after years of following it from the outside.
Well, I'm glad you follow it on the outside. It's a good time to just remind our listeners they could hear this on korama.us at any time. So Alex, tell us what brings you here this summer, and then we want to hear about what's going on in Israel.
So I've been coming to Camp Ramah for, I must be something like 15 summers, I think, something like that. I'm really here because my wife is a Yoetzet. My wife, Perry Sinclair, is a Yoetzet. She's been working here for many, many summers. My kids have gone through camp as camp rats and gone through some of the Eidot. My daughter right now is in Shor HaShim, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. My daughter Malila is here having a great time. And I'm just up here for a few days as a staff spouse. I mean, my main job here is doing the laundry, which I'm going to do as soon as we're done.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the more important jobs here. I know that. And just for full disclosure, I know your kids pretty well. I know your daughter from when she was in the youngest Gan and Chaverim groups. And of course, I know your oldest son, Eshi. And just a shout out to Eshi. He's a great techie kind of guy, and he was with us in ham radio and earned a couple of amateur radio licenses. Very proud of him.
Right. Actually, one of the reasons why I haven't yet retired is because I'm still paying off all the equipment that Mitch advised Eshi to buy when he got his ham radio license.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're busy because I have another email prepared for him. So.
Okay.
All right. So I was really looking forward to getting you down here because I know you're involved in some interesting things. Interesting, you're involved in many interesting programs in Israel, and we also have in the studio Liana Baranski.
Baranski, Ken.
And Liana, he bitsevet Radio Kan, be Radio Korama, vihi chayalet. Omrim chayalet, chayalet achshav. בצהל, מה את עושה שם בעברית?
משקית חינוך, education coordinator.
So, Liana's going to join us in this discussion. First, give us a little more background about you, Alex. Alex, you're a professor, PhD. Tell us.
Yeah. So maybe I'll start by saying I was born in the UK, in London, and that's one of the main differences between me and Liana is that I grew up in London, so I'm sitting here in this beautiful mid-70s weather that Mitch, you spoke about before, in a shorts and T-shirt, and I'm still schwitzing. And Liana's here from Kiryat, got wrapped up in a sweatshirt and long pants, and she seems very comfortable. So that's that's one of the main differences between us. I grew up in London, moved to Israel in the mid-90s. I did a PhD at Hebrew University in education, in Jewish education, at the Melton Center for Jewish Education. Then between 2001 and 2007, we lived here in New Jersey. We lived in Caldwell. I dragged Perry, my wife, my wife is Israeli, born in Israel. I dragged her here for a number of years. We had a great time living here in Caldwell, and that's when we first came to camp and came to know camp. I taught actually at camp. I was on Sevet Yadut for a few years in a row, those in that period. And then in 2007, we moved back to Israel. So while we were here, I was on faculty at the Davidson School at JTS. I taught and still teach courses in education, in pedagogy, in curriculum design, in a bunch of other education courses. My two areas of speciality of interest in education are firstly Bible education. Last week, actually, I was working at a JTS seminar for a program called the Legacy Heritage Instructional Leadership Institute, which is a program where we train Judaic studies heads in day schools to develop Bible curriculum, to work with their faculty on writing Bible and rabbinics curriculum. So I'm still very involved in that and other areas around the teaching of Bible and the teaching of Israel. And a lot of the work that I've done over the past, I guess, 10 years or so is around writing stuff and teaching and thinking about questions around the teaching of Israel. I wrote a book which should be on everybody's bookshelf, called Loving the Real Israel, an Educational Agenda for Liberal Zionism. And I've written a bunch of articles and op-eds. I just actually had an op-ed in Haaretz just the other day about some of these issues. And so much of my thinking is about the way we teach and talk about Israel in the diaspora. What are some of the challenges involved in teaching Israel? What are some of the questions we should be asking ourselves when it comes to teaching Israel?
And you live in Modi'in, I believe, right?
Yeah, I live in Modi'in, which is a great city, little town/city of about, I think it's now 85,000-90,000 people. It's about halfway between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, and it's lovely. We call it the T-neck of Israel. So that can be an insult or a compliment, depending on whether or not you like T-neck, but I like it. I'm a suburban kind of guy. It's a very boring city with not much culture and not much excitement. Lots of cafes and that kind of stuff, but most of the people who live in Modi'in end up commuting either to Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, and it's kind of homogenous and boring, but I like it. Say again?
Better than Kiryat Gat, that's for sure.
I look forward to seeing both of those cities in Israel. So Alex, you mentioned liberal Zionism. You're doing work on that. So in case some of our listeners aren't familiar with that term, what
do I mean by it?
Liberal Zionism.
So I thought the way to explain it was I had this brainwave just before we started. I mentioned that I wrote an op-ed in Haaretz the other day. Actually, I wrote it last week and it came out the other day. The content of that op-ed itself is not really important or relevant, but I got, you know, I sent it out to some colleagues and friends, and I got a response from a bunch of people, and one in particular wrote, I'm not going to mention who he is, but he's a well-known person. He also works in the field of, he's a professional in the field of Jewish education, works for a well-known organization. He wrote the following sentence after saying Kol HaKavod to me, etc. He wrote, "I count myself as a lover of Israel, but have serious concerns over the political and religious leadership." He wrote that to me as part of his email. And I think if I was to sum up what it means today to be a liberal Zionist, that's a great summary. It's to be a lover of Israel, but to have serious concerns about its political and religious leadership and its political and religious direction. I think that, and I'll speak for myself now, not for this colleague of mine who I just quoted anonymously. I think that Israel is a place which is very important to me, a place which has a deep, you know, deep connection to my heart and my soul and my mind, a place which I love, a place which I think is, a modern miracle, a place where the Jewish people have the chance after 2,000 years to kind of create a society a society built on Jewish roots and a place where Judaism can kind of come onto the national stage, can re-enter history, as an Israeli sociologist whose name escapes me right now, but that's a phrase he wrote, where the Jews can re-enter history. So with all of that, I have very deep concerns about its current direction, both politically and religiously, and I would even say that in terms of the relationship between American Jews and Israel, what we really see is a struggle for the soul of Judaism, a struggle for how we understand Judaism today, a struggle for what it means to be a Jew, what Jewishness means, and I think that we increasingly see that American American Jews and Israeli Jews have increasingly different responses to that question. And that's a concern because, in my opinion at least, I think that the way that Israel is going is deeply concerning. I'll say more about it, but that I would say is the beginning kind of summary.
Well, many of us here, certainly I know, feel the same way and are really struggling with these issues. So let's talk, you mentioned both politically and religiously. So which is easier to speak about first? Which side of that coin is easier to tackle first?
I don't know. In some ways, the religious piece is easier. I mean, they're both extremely complicated. The religious piece is somewhat easier because I would say they're, at least within the maybe the community of listeners to Kol Ramah, there may be more a little bit more agreement about some of the basic things. So let's start with the religious piece. I'm a conservative Jew. I'm a liberal Jew. I believe in I have an enormous amount of affection and of love for Jewish tradition, for Jewish texts, for Jewish ideas, for Jewish practice. I'm a Shomer Shabbat and Shomer Kashrut. Certainly, the way that I understand those terms, modern Jew. I love Jewish learning. I spend my life thinking about Jewish texts and having my life being infused by Jewish texts and Jewish practice. And along with all that, I'm totally committed to historical understanding of Judaism, to a scholarly understanding of Judaism, to the understanding that Judaism. Can they hear that on the radio? there's lots of banging and bumping going on above us, so maybe you can't hear that
on a combat zone down here.
But anyway, I don't think it's somebody trying to break into the radio hut to try to kind of pull me off the air. I hope it's not that. Yeah. So along with that love for Judaism, I'm deeply committed to an academic, scholarly understanding, a historical understanding of Judaism. I think that Judaism has a history. I think the Torah was written by human beings, not by God. I think that biblical criticism has proven that. I think that halakha has developed. Halakha is deeply infused with sociological influences, not purely, religious or theological ones. You can't separate those two things. I think that Judaism. I seek to understand Judaism historically, and to understand that whether it's around issues of egalitarianism or attitudes to gay and lesbians or attitudes towards the other. However we understand the other, I think that Judaism needs to realize that classical Jewish texts were sociologically influenced in their statements about some of those kinds of issues, and that therefore we need to kind of rethink and update them. And so I'm a fully committed and fully egalitarian Jew. I believe that men and women should be able to practice Judaism publicly in whichever way they wish, equally. So I have along with that love of Judaism, I also have a whole bunch of things that I'm also committed to in terms of understanding it in a certain way. And I think that's broadly speaking where most non-Orthodox American Jews are. Of course, there's a spectrum of beliefs and of practices within non-Orthodox American Judaism, but that's where I am. And I think that that in Israel there are communities that are like that as well. Many communities that are like that as well and see Judaism in that way. But within Israel, there's a very strong, I would call it fundamentalist Orthodox approach to Judaism, which we see in the Haredi community, and we see in many aspects of the Dati Lumi, the national religious community. And I think that those streams are first of all wrong in their understanding of Judaism. Secondly, deeply, deeply troubling. And I think taking Judaism, taking the Jewish nation, in a very, very problematic direction. And so I really think that we're in a struggle for the soul of Judaism, and it's a struggle that we're losing. We liberal Jews are currently losing.
Well, you know, I find myself very much in line personally with how you described your the way you see yourself and your family fitting into Judaism. And so let's say I'm with you in that camp. I'm an American Jew. I live in New York City. And certainly no problem. You know, I want something akin to what you're talking about. I up at the Upper West Side. I want something a little more serious but still egalitarian. I'm up at Riverdale with Avi Weiss. If I want to be a fundamentalist Haredi, no problem. I'm in Williamsburg. So here in New York, and well, especially New York, other areas too, no sweat, no soul wrenching. You do what you want, I do what I want, no problem. Mm-hmm. So why is this, where is this struggle coming from in your mind? Here in, as a New York Jew, ain't got no problem. What's going on in Israel?
Right. Yeah, well, I guess here's where the political piece does come in, because in Israel, you know, a lot of these issues get manifested, the way they manifest themselves is through the power of political parties. And so that does lead to various legal and governmental barriers to the kind of relaxed pluralism that you're describing on the Upper West Side or in Riverdale or whatever. So that, you know, again, this is where you can't separate the politics from the religion in Israel. But you know, if you have political parties in the Knesset that are, you know, infused with the kind of fundamentalist religious approach that I just described before, then that leads to all kinds of troubling, in my opinion, troubling manifestations. So, for example, you have the Bayit Yehudi, the national, the Jewish Home National Religious Party, right now is in a pretty strong position in the Knesset. They didn't get, you know, that they got, you know, they didn't get as many seats as let's say the Likud but because of the makeup of the coalition, they're in a very powerful position. Naftali Bennett controls runs the education ministry. The party also runs a bunch of other controls, have members of Knesset who are in charge of other ministries, and so that gives an incredible amount of power to do things. For example, let's talk about education, to change the curriculum in certain ways, to put certain stresses into the curriculum, not just in the national religious schools, but also in the secular schools. As you know, and probably listeners know, Israel is split up into different school systems, actually four school systems, ultra-Orthodox, Haredi, Arab, secular, and religious. And there are maybe that's there are other little ones, but basically, let's say for the sake of argument, for those four major ones. So when a party that has a certain religious perspective on Judaism has political control of, let's say in this case, the education ministry, it can do all kinds of things in terms of changing the way that education happens, or the way that education, you know, the kinds of curricular materials and the kind and staff training and funds for certain kinds of projects that happen in the education system, and that can have a massive effect on society. You know, another way that this manifests itself is maybe will be more familiar to American listeners, which is, you know, let's say with the High Court or the Supreme Court, if you have a particular political party is in power and has the ability to change the makeup of the Supreme Court or the High Court, clearly that can have not just, you know, that has legal implications, which then filter into all kinds of societal, cultural, educational, religious, etc. implications as well. And so we're in a situation now where because the governing coalition has now, for the past many years, it feels like 20 years, but it's not. But the kind of the Likud Bayit Yehudi coalition, or the coalition that's centered around Likud and Bayit Yehudi, has been in power in the Knesset. So for many years now, we're seeing Israel being, I would say, pushed into a direction which is, it's a religious direction, but that has huge, I think, devastating implications for not just religion, but for education and culture and kind of the ideals of liberal democracy as I see them, and so you can't separate the religion from the politics.
Every time there seems to be a step forward in terms of items that are important to the more liberal communities in the United States, North America. Every time there seems to be a step forward in Israel, it's almost as if then there's followed by two steps backwards. And just recently, again, lists have come out. I'll use the word blackballing rabbis, not going to accept their conversions. My understanding is there's now many rabbis in Israel gaining smicha, specifically not through the Rabbanut, and almost making the Rabbanut irrelevant on the ground. Am I correct? What is going on? What's going on? What's the response on the ground in Israel of younger or more liberal people to the politics you describe?
I think there are reactions to it, and I think that they are, I'm going to be kind of Debbie Downer here. I think that they are, while they're interesting, and there are a lot of these sort of little sparks, statistically speaking, they're a drop in the ocean. So yeah, maybe there are a few different alternative Rabbanut programs. There's one now through the Hartman Institute, which is run through Rabbi Tamar Elad Applebaum, who's a conservative rabbi, a female conservative rabbi who many people in camp may have come across. She's terrific, and she's a part of that as well. And there's another kind of, there's a small liberal modern Orthodox rabbinical school called Sulam Yaakov, run in part by a guy called Aaron Leibovich, who's an American, American slash Israeli rabbi whose father was one of my teachers, and actually his father married her, my wife and me. So there are a lot of these kind of little things happening, but I, statistically speaking, in terms of the demography, the Rabbanut still has incredible power and incredible control, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. I mean, another way to think about it, another way to look at this is about marriages. So again, there are increasing numbers of Israelis who are choosing not to get married through the Rabbanut and going to Cyprus and all kinds of things like that. I'd be interested actually on this to hear from Liana in terms of, you're a little young maybe, but in terms of your, what do you see in the kind of, in terms of like young Israelis, like is that on the radar screen or not of people? But I think that statistically speaking, while there are a few Israelis here and there who are going to Cyprus, and maybe there's more now doing that than there were 5 or 10 years ago, I think it's still a drop in the ocean, and there's still, I don't know what the stats are, but my sense is that still most Israelis, when they get married, most secular Israelis, kind of when they get married, they hold their nose and they go do it through the Rabbanut, because it's kind of, that's the sort of part, it's the easiest or whatever, and you don't want to upset your sabba, and you don't want to upset your cousin who won't come if it's a reform rabbi doing the marriage or whatever. So you kind of hold your nose and do it, and so there are these kind of little maybe changes, but there's a lot more to be done. And I think one of my frustrations, and here I'll relate this back to my work in Israel education, one of my frustrations with Israel education, the way it's practiced in America, and one of the things that I really work towards is that I think that we are very busy trying to get kids to engage and to feel connected to Israel, and that's really important, and I want Americans to be engaged and connected to Israel. But because we're so busy trying to get kids to love Israel, quote unquote, we actually are forgetting that really we're in a struggle for the Jewish people's soul, and we need to kind of find a way to get people to relate to Israel and love Israel, but in a way that we light a bit of a fire in them and realize that the way that their relationship should be manifested with Israel is not just, oh wow, Israel's great, la la la, but okay, Israel's great, and I've got a job as an American Jew living in Riverdale. I've got a job. I need to be trying to save the Jewish people here, and that sometimes means that I've got to be arguing with Israel and criticizing Israelis and saying to Israelis, guys, come on, like, listen, wake up, listen to me. I may not live in Israel, I may not serve in the army, I may not pay taxes, but I've got what to say about this, and let's have a conversation. And actually, if we have that conversation seriously, that can only redound to the good of the Jewish people and of Israel.
What a great point to have Liana come into this discussion. Liana, you're a young woman in Israel in the army now. What, you have any perspectives on these issues? And I really don't know you well personally. I don't know where you, your family are in this milieu. But tell us what tell us a little bit about your background and tell us how these issues affect you.
אז אני אדבר בעברית, sorry Mitch, וקצת קשה לי, כאילו קצת קשה לי לעשות את השיחה הזאת באנגלית. גם ניסיתי לעקוב, אתה מדבר נורא מהר. אז ישר בהתחלה, כשמיץ' שאל אותך אם אתה רוצה לדבר, על מה יותר כך לדבר על דת או על פוליטיקה, ישר חשבתי, זה בא ביחד, כאילו בישראל דת ופוליטיקה, זה אותו שיח, הדת נהיה ממש ממש פוליטי, ואני חילוניה, אני לא דתייה, לא מתחברת לתפילות, זה לא, כאילו, לא העולם שלי בכלל, אבל כאילו כן מאוד עצוב לי שהשיח בישראל, כשמדברים על דת, ישר נהיה ממש על, כאילו, שיח על כפייה דתית, וישר כשמדברים על הרבנות ומדברים על דת, אז ישר נרתעים ולוקחים צעד אחורה, כי מסתכלים על זה כמשהו נורא שלילי. אני מבינה למה בסופו של דבר, כי כן יש הרגשה של כפייה דתית במדינה, אם זה אין תחבורה ציבורית בשבת, כל מיני, אם זה בעניין החתונות, כל מיני דברים כאלה, וזה אני חושבת, כי אני חושבת שזה בגלל שהדת כאילו נהיה דבר נורא פוליטי בארץ. עכשיו השאלה גם איך באמת יוצאים מזה, כי כאילו, לא כל האנשים שהם חילונים יכולים להיות נורא, נורא מקבלים ונורא פתוחים לגבי דת ולגבי אנשים דתיים ולגבי לחיות ביחד, שזה משהו שכאילו ישראל נורא מתקשה בו, הקיום, כאילו, הרב תרבותיות הזו. ואני חושבת שבאמת צריך כאילו לעשות איזושהי חשיבה מחדש של איך עושים את זה, כאילו שאיך משלבים, כן, איך באמת, שאתה אמרת שיש דאגה לעם היהודי, איך באמת פותרים את זה גם, כאילו, הרבה פעמים אני שואלת את עצמי, שכאילו, אני כן מאוד אוהבת את ישראל, מחוברת לישראל, אני מרגישה ישראלית, וישראל מושתתת על הרבה, על הרבה ערכים ביהדות, היא מושתתת על זה שכולנו יהודים, ואני חילוניה, ואני הרבה פעמים שואלת את עצמי, איך זה עובד, איך אני עדיין מרגישה חלק מהעם הזה, אבל לא מאמינה, כאילו, בהרבה דברים, וזה דברים שאני שואלת את עצמי, ובאמת איך זה עובד ביחד, ואיך זה עובד עם ה... אני כן חושבת שכאילו ההלכה זה, גם אני מסכימה איתך שההלכה זה משהו שנכתב על ידי אנשים, וזה משהו שמתקדם, וכן צריך להיות מותאם, כאילו, לעולם המודרני היום, ויש אנשים ש... אבל עדיין, בכל זאת, אם יש אנשים שהם לא מאמינים בזה והם מאמינים באורח חיים אחר, אז צריך לתת להם לחיות את האורח חיים הזה. אבל עדיין, איך חיים את זה במקביל, כדי שלא נפגע אחד בשני.
שאני אמשיך בעברית או באנגלית?
Whatever.
Whatever. I mean,
you can do it in English.
One of the interesting things is that I think there's a lot of Israelis who feel the same way as you, but when it comes down to the kalpi, when it comes down to the elections, many people will still vote for political parties who will have, we know from history, will have no problem, you know, doing whatever the religious parties want to do. And so there's a gap there between what people say in this kind of situation, and when it comes down to it, voting for parties who are going to perpetuate the status quo. And then the other kind of interesting thing about that is that, you know, I think I'll say for me, one of the frustrating things for me is in terms of when I talk with Chiloni Israelis is, I understand the frustration and the anger about Kfiyah Datit, and I understand all the thing about the Autobusim B'Shabbat and all these kinds of things. But that kind of often, I don't know, maybe not for you, I know you're here at Ramah, but for many secular Israelis, that kind of translates into and all approaches to Judaism, I don't want to have anything to do with. You know, and so that's been a kind of classic a kind of classic stumbling block that the reform and conservative movements have struggled with in Israel for generations, which is how do you get Israelis to kind of to be open to more modern, open, pluralistic, egalitarian views of Judaism, and to kind of get over that thing as like, you know, ugh, I can't, you know, I'm chiloni, I don't have anything to do with Judaism, and that includes you crazy conservative and reform Jews. How do we like, and that's, I don't know the answer to that. It's a frustration to me, because I would, you know, love to find a figure out how to get Israelis to become, you know, secular Israelis and like a traditional, like Masorti Israel, not conservative Masorti, but, you know, just, Mizrahi, Masorti Israelis who are to be able to kind of see things a little bit less black and white and to see things as, okay, you know, maybe there are different ways of being Jewish and translate that into political, into their political voting. And here, though, we do get into some of the political questions, which I'd be happy to talk about as well.
So if here, in the U.S., you know, there are people my age, somewhat younger, who really grew up with a nascent Israel and grew up and were around during the 67 period and knew recent immigrants to the United States after World War II and grew up living that history. You know, there's no question we could feel beleaguered. We can have our rabbis blackballed. We can have our promises dashed about feeling comfortable at our holy sites. Yeah. Pull that on us. Do it. It's
still,
okay.
Still
nothing.
Support
nothing is going to stop our deep love. But, you know, I see young people, my kids' ages, Liana's age, younger, in high school now, going into college, and say, well, what's going on here? Well, who needs this? What are you talking about? Do you feel there's a risk of changing the connection of young Jews worldwide, specifically North America, to the Jewish state?
Yeah. Look, this is a massive question, and this is basically relates to, you know, to a lot of the work that I do around Israel education. First of all, you're right. There is a disconnect, an increasing disconnect between young American Jews in Israel. That I think is very clear. There is a little bit of debate in the research about whether or not it's really true. There are two opposing schools of thought. I don't want to get into the details of that, I'm pretty much firmly. I mean, I'm pretty persuaded by one school of thought, which has really been built on the work of a social scientist called Steve Cohen, Professor Steve Cohen, who I think is increasingly proving and demonstrating that this disconnect between young American Jews and Israel is increasing. And so then you have to ask why that is. And I think that when we try to do Israel education in the way that it was done. No offense, Mitch, the previous generation, which was correct for that generation in a situation where Israel was the David against an Arab Goliath. And when Israel was a beleaguered country surrounded by, you know, countries that wanted to drive it into the sea. And when Israel had an economy that was struggling to keep its head above the water, you know, and so on and so on and so on. You know, that kind of approach to Israel was right then. But the situation today is different. Okay. Now, of course, there are some Arab countries that surround Israel that still do want to drive it into the sea, of course. But the situation is much more complicated and much more optimistic, actually, than that. We have peace treaties with Jordan and Egypt. We have, you know, the Gulf nations clamoring, like begging us to make peace already. I mean, the Gulf nations are like, you know, like a teenager who keeps phoning up, the teenage boy phoning up the girl who says, please go out with me, please go out with me. And it's like the teenage girl is like, no, I don't want to talk to you. And we're the teenage girl. It's insane. Like that since the Arab, the Saudi peace initiative was on the table, I think 2003, but I think that date may not be 100% correct, somewhere around that. But since then, you know, the Gulf states are begging us to, like, let's solve the Palestinian thing already, and please be friends with us, please join us against Iran. You know, Iran is now the kind of common enemy, and we see that over the past several months, that's become even more so, and even Bibi Netanyahu talks about this and is really open about the fact that the Gulf states want to make peace with us, which would have been unthinkable in 1967. The fact that Saudi Arabia is basically begging us to make peace with them, and so on and so forth. So that situation is very different. The Palestinian situation, of course, is very complicated. I certainly don't come with any don't pretend to have any a magic solution. And Hamas and Hezbollah are clearly massive, massive problems, and there are Palestinians out there who do want to drive us into the sea still, and do want to destroy, and that's you know, I'm certainly not diminishing that issue, but there are many Palestinians out there who have come to terms with us, who want to make peace with us, who at the end of the day just want to have a regular just live and want to live in a kind of normal neighborhood, national neighborhood with us, and who would be willing, if we would only do some things that we need to do, to kind of create a situation which would be much, much, much better for us and for our children. So I think that teaching Israel and talking about Israel and those kind of previous generation things just won't wash anymore. When all you have to do, a young American Jew, all they have to do is to open up the newspaper, to read an article in the New York Times. They'll meet a Palestinian on campus and become friends with them. They'll read a book. To try to hide any of the kind of the more the complicated stuff from people just doesn't work anymore. And so we have to develop ways of doing Israel education which are honest, which are trying to get people to kind of develop a powerful relationship with this place, with Israel, and doing so in a way that allows them to express their qualms, to question, to criticize, to be angry when necessary, to say, here's what I think we should be doing. And I think that particular thing, whether it's political or religious, wrong and is crazy, and to be involved in a conversation. Ultimately, we want to empower young American Jews to be in this conversation, because that's a great, interesting, compelling conversation to be in. And by denying them access to that powerful, compelling conversation, actually we're denying them we're denying ourselves success in Israel education.
You're listening to Kol Ramah with Dr. Alex Sinclair and Liana Baranski here in the studio from Seved Radio, and a current IDF soldier. So Alex, as we're approaching towards the end of our podcast, let me just ask you, you started by talking about politics in Israel and education and religious liberal Zionism, and suddenly that comes into a discussion and leads us to Israel-Palestinian relations. So somehow it's all tied up together. Yeah. How is that?
Yeah, for sure. Then that's why it's so complicated. Yeah, it is all tied up together. Look, the Israel-Palestinian, Israeli-Palestinian conflict is one of the major. It is one of the major kind of, let's say, aspects of Israeli society, or one of the major kind of, if you want to be involved in Israel or think about Israel, or you can't hide away from that. Now, I think with Israel education, there are two mistakes we can make. One is to try to do Israel education without touching that, and just because the kind of startup nation Israel education thing, where we talk about is cherry tomatoes, right? I don't know if you've noticed that. I don't know if that comes up at campus like that. Everywhere you look, it's like, oh, Israel created the cherry tomato, or as I would say, of course, tomato. And USB and USB sticks and Intel chips and we try to do Israel and beaches. And fun, and we can try to do Israel education, kind of pretend that the Palestinian issue doesn't exist, and that's a mistake, because as I said, people won't buy it. Smart young people will very soon realize that they're, you know, that somebody's trying to, you know, as we say in Hebrew, oved aleihem, trying to kind of get one over on them. So that's one mistake that you can make. And on the other hand, you can't, I don't think, make Israel education only about the conflict. You have to, you know, it has to be there, and you have to do it, but it has to be kind of part of a broader thing. But I do think that that we have to allow people to engage with Israel and express their opinions about the conflict. And this does create, I think, sometimes tensions with Israelis, because in general, again, huge generalization, and I don't know where you come from, Liana, in terms of politics, etc., but in general, many Israelis are more right-wing politically than many American liberal non-Orthodox American Jews. And a lot of the times Israelis feel, when they have these conversations with American Jews, you don't know anything, you don't live here, you're not going in the army, your kids aren't going on buses worried if their buses are going to blow up, so you have no right to speak about this. I hear that a lot from Israelis. I'd be interested to hear what, Liana, what you think about this. My position in terms of Israel education is that Israelis have to basically get over that. You know, we want American Jews to be engaged with Israel. And so you have to allow them to express opinions. You have to allow them to kind of to be activist rather than passive in their relationship with Israel. And if that means that they're going to say things that you don't like or you don't agree with, or you think they don't know what they're talking about, okay, then let's talk about it and let's look at the facts together. But you can't silence people. When people feel silenced, they're going to check out. And I think one of the reasons, I think, educationally, that a lot of young American Jews are checking out from Israel is that whenever they try to engage with Israel, at some point they get silenced. Your opinion doesn't matter. Your what you want to do at the Kotel doesn't matter. What you think about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict doesn't matter. And so eventually, if somebody says that to you enough times, you're like, okay, screw you, I'm not interested, I'll go do something else. I've got a lot of other things to do in my life. We have to enable American Jews to have their voices heard, to be part of this important, critical conversation, you know. And Israelis, I think, have to, like, you know, create a little bit of openness to that, and to say, okay, maybe I've got what to learn from Americans. Maybe they don't live here, and maybe they don't see it exactly from my perspective, but maybe they see things that I don't see. Maybe seeing it from outside can actually help me think about things a little bit differently. And so so Israelis, I think, also have a responsibility in this to dial down that negativity about you guys don't know what you're talking about and you guys can't, and to say, okay, let's talk about it and maybe I've got what to learn from you American Jews.
So Liana, maybe I put you on the spot by inviting you to join us in this podcast, but...
כן, אתה אמרת שאתה לא יודע מאיפה אני באה, מה הדעות שלי, האמת גם אני נורא בעצמי מבולבלת, אני עדיין, כאילו הייתי בהרבה שיחות כאלה, אני עדיין לא יודעת מה לחשוב, אני כאילו, אני בת 19, אף פעם לא הלכתי לבחירות, אף פעם לא בחרתי באף אחד, אני מסכימה איתך שהרבה ישראלים נוטים להגיד שעל אמריקאים, על... מי שלא גר בישראל, אתם לא יודעים שום דבר, אתם לא גרים כאן, לא הולכים לצבא, אין לכם שום זכות להגיד שום דבר. אני מודה שאני מוצאת את עצמי הרבה פעמים גם מרגישה ככה לפעמים, אבל אני כן מנסה להתנתק מההרגשה הזאת, כי בסופו של דבר הם כן באים כדי, והם כן מתעניינים. אני הייתי במכינה, מכינת כל עמי, זה מכינה של הסוכנות היהודית, שבשלושה חודשים הראשונים זה ביחד עם אוסטרלים. כן, ויש שם הרבה אוסטרלים שאומנם לא רוצים לחיות בישראל, לא רוצים להתגייס, אבל כן, יש לי חברים שהלכו ללמוד יחסים בינלאומיים בשביל לייצג את ישראל, בשביל לעזור לישראל, מהמקום שלהם, מאוסטרליה, ביחסים בינלאומיים, כי הם כן אוהבים את ישראל, הם כן ציוניים, אבל בדרך שלהם. אז אני חושבת שזה גם... זה גם נורא בעייתי, כי כשמסתכלים על ציונות, זה גם נושא נורא גדול, ומה זה ציונות ומי הוא ציוני, כאילו, האם אתה יכול לחיות באמריקה, באוסטרליה, באנגליה, ועדיין להיות ציוני? זה גם שאלה שצריך לשאול, זה גם שאלה שהרבה אנשים נורא קשה לענות אליה, ויוצרת הרבה מריבות. הבעיה היא ש...
לא, אבל אני רוצה לשאול אותך, האם את מוכנה שיהודי מהתפוצות, יהודי אוסטרלי, בוא נגיד, או יהודי אמריקאי, לא רק, שלא רוצה אולי לא לייצג את ישראל, אבל שהוא אומר, אני ציוני, וחלק מהציונות הזה, זה לבקר את ישראל, לא לעשות ביקור, כאילו, אבל לבקר, למתוח ביקורת על ישראל. ולהגיד שאני לא אוהב מה שמפלגה מסוימת עושה בישראל, או אני לא אוהב את הכיוון הזה, ואני לא אוהב, האם את מוכנה גם לקבל את זה כציונות מהתפוצות?
זה מאוד קשה, כי כמו שאמרת, הם לא חיים בישראל, איך הם יכולים להעביר ביקורת, וכאילו, הם מעבירים ביקורת מהצד, כאילו, כזה, זה נורא נוח לעשות את זה, כשהם לא גרים בישראל, ולא חיים את זה, ולא, וזה גם לא משפיע עליהם באיזושהי צורה. אני כן חושבת שבאיזשהו מקום זה חשוב, כי בסופו של דבר זה אנשים שמסתכלים על הדברים האלה מבחוץ, רואים איך זה נראה מבחוץ, רואים איך זה נראה מבחינת שאר העולם, ואני חושבת שכל ביקורת, גם אם היא רעה, גם אם היא טובה, גם אם קצת קשה לקבל אותה, זה נורא חשוב בשביל ההתקדמות שלנו ובשביל העתיד שלנו. ואנחנו פשוט צריכים ללמוד איך לקבל את זה ואיך לעבוד עם זה ואיך כאילו, איך לקיים שיח טוב ושיח מקדם שיעזור לכולנו, גם אם זה קשה.
I'll just say one other thing if I can, Mitch, which is that this thing about criticizing Israel or expressing an opinion about Israel, that there's often a double standard here where Israelis get very upset when diaspora Jews criticize Israel from the left and express it, but if you're criticizing Israel from the right in the diaspora and saying Israel should do more of this, then that's really a problem. And we see, you know, a lot of Israelis will say, oh, I don't want American Jews to get involved in Israel. Well, okay, well, when it's Sheldon Adelson, or when it's people who are funding things from the right, suddenly that seems to be kind of less of a problem. So there's a kind of double standard going on here as well, which we need to think about.
Listen, I want to thank you both so much, Alex. I really have a newfound appreciation for the work you're doing. I really didn't know what you're doing. I knew it's interesting, and I knew it's important. Now I'm beginning to have a feel for it. And Liana, I'm so happy you joined us, giving a perspective which I have to admit was not what I expected to hear from you, which is fine. So I really learned so much from what you said, a young secular Chiluni Israeli, a wonderful young woman, soldier in IDF, Dr. Alex Sinclair on the faculty of many in the of JTS.
Primarily JTS.
thank you for joining us on Kol Ramah, and Im Ezrat Hashem, next year we'll do this again, and we're going to bring in a young American Jew and another young Israeli here at Camp Ramah, and we can go on. Maybe you'll explain the progress in the interim year, which may be a short conversation. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's the holy grail, what you just said, Mitch, which is to have American Jews and Israeli Jews talking about and arguing over, in a spirit of machloket l'shem shemayim, arguing over these issues together. That's in my opinion, that's what we should be aiming for, you know, and that's I think that in camp is a great opportunity for that they should have the mishlacha and the American staff members not just working together, not just kind of organizing stuff for the kids, the younger kids, but talking with each other, arguing, debate. We should not be afraid of debate. As Jews, debate, machloket, is something that's kind of a core part of our identity and our history and our being, and machloket l'shem shemayim is something that we know and we love, and we should have that between American Jews and Israelis about Israel.
Dr. Alex Sinclair, Liana Baranski, thank you both for joining us on Radio Kol Ramah 102.3 FM. Thank you.
כל רמה 102.3 FM.